I'm Leah.
And I'm Bree.
And this is Bad Taste Book Club, where we talk about books. Sometimes miss the mark a little.
Just a tad.
Today's book is Give the Dark My Love by Beth Revis. It's a really good title. I like the title.
Every time I went to find the book or type it in, I'd get the title wrong 3 times before I got it right.
That happened to me too.
It was like, send the dark my love, send my love to the dark, give my love to the dark. Apparently my brain could not deal with that phrase.
And that continued on the entire book.
Yeah, I'm just going to be really upfront. I really struggled with this book, but let's talk about it anyway.
I do want to give a little bit of a content warning on this, just because this is probably still 2020 when this comes out, and it's a book about a plague. That might be too much for you this year, and this episode might be too much for you, so if you cannot deal with us talking about a plague, which 100% a reasonable decision to make in 2020. We'll see you next time.
And if you have gallows humour like us, come on board. So the core premise of this is in a fictional land, a girl from the country gets a scholarship to a prestigious inner city magic school. When she arrives, it looks like there's a plague going on. She gets involved with a professor who's studying it. Is sort of your main premise. And
yeah.
Then necromancy happens.
Necromancy, which a magic school gone wrong with necromancy sounds like it would be a really good idea for a book. I completely love the core premise of this. I wish that I could have read the book that I imagined.
Yes. I'm a funny person about magic schools. I've seen them done really well. I've seen them done really badly. So I'm always like, every time I look at a book where its core premise is, there's a magic school, I'm always be like,
Our main character's name is Nedra, which I'm sure is short for something, but we never learn out what it is short for. She is the goodest girl, you guys. She's so good.
She's so good. She's so good.
Did you know her sister's kind of slut and it's just like person crazy. I thought boy crazy at the beginning, but no, she's bi, which comes up.
It comes up in one of the letters, but it's a very blink and you miss moment.
Right, yeah.
Like, it took me a while to realise how much background gay was going on in this book.
Yes, well, that's because the foreground is super hetero. And with that, we should move on to our secondary protagonist. I don't even know, like, I realise that he is the only other person who gets a point of view in this book, but I don't even know that I would call him a secondary protagonist. He's like a plot device.
I think she is too, though.
So you've got Nedra, who is a very good girl, who has studied so hard because her dad is like he's a bookseller / I'm pretty sure he lends books out too.
He's a roaming librarian in a rural area, farmland in the north of the country. And Nedra is like very poor in a little village and so when she goes to the city, it's her first time being there and it's all very exciting. And because she comes from a small village, all she does is read.
Do you know what? Like young adult fantasy, if you're an author writing a young adult fantasy, you're obviously talking to people who love to read. And so if you make the main character also love to read, it gives them like a little in. Kind of comes off a bit wanky though, because you're like, I'm an author. I'm doing the most important thing in the world.
I think the problem is when, like, if you've only got one character with any character traits, it comes across wanky. If you have multiple characters with multiple character traits and different people inhabiting the world, it feels less like you're being preached to.
And look, I love some really trashy books who have main characters who love reading, but it is kind of like, we know what you're doing. We all know what you're doing. You can let go of this. What is his name? That's Gray.
It's Gregory. I don't know how they get Gray.
It's Gregory or Gregory because she says it wrong. And then he's like, that's so cute. Look at her with her little provincial accent. I adore this. This is not patronizing at all.
So you might have worked out from that voice and those phrases that our love interest is Gray, or Gregory, who is the son of one of the very senior members in politics, from memory.
Yes, but he hates politics and doesn't find it interesting at all.
Which is why he's going to a very prestigious alchemy school. Sorry, we must clarify, this isn't a magic school, it's an alchemy school. To study medicine, because, you know, that's definitely has no politics involved.
And his daddy, in the first chapter, which he is the main point of view, tries to set him up somebody very famous at a fancy, prestigious hospital for his internship, and he's super mad about it. But he's also gonna do it, but he's super mad about it because his dad only wants him to do it for political reasons, and he wants to do it to show his dad that he's not gonna be in politics.
Because politics is bad, guys.
Yeah, caring about politics is so passé.
So those are our two characters, and as we've already mentioned, this is one of those ones where you get chapters from different characters' point of views. It does, to me, having the swapping narrative definitely makes it even less Nedra's story than it already is to begin with.
Yeah, to be honest, I don't think that having Gray be a point of view character added anything to the story.
It just meant he was more already aware of the political landscape of the city, so you didn't have to write in Nedra learning or understanding it, because every time the audience needed to understand the political landscape or the class landscape of the city, you just went into his point of view.
Here's the thing about that, is that he doesn't care about any of that stuff, and so necessarily, and I will say that she did a pretty decent job of making the poor little rich boy behave like a poor little rich boy the whole way through. Whether or not you like that as a character, spoilers, I don't. He at least was somewhat consistent in his, wah, this is all about me. I am really sad that we don't have a video podcast, because the look on Bree's face right now is just perfection.
This is a struggle book. So we come into the city, our two point of view characters, Nedra and Gray, and we have, Nedra has a twin sister called Nessie, who's back at home. Gray has a shitty friend named Thomas, who is just like, if he's the good, sad, rich boy, Thomas is the angry, bad, rich boy. That's about as, what you're imagining? Yes, just like that. We have a professor,
Master Ostrom,
who takes both Gray and Nedra under his wing, but mostly Nedra.
He's very scaly and greasy wing.
He's like very much like a grumpy professor archetype.
2 seconds. He's a grumpy professor for 2 whole seconds.
The grumpiness comes back. He comes and goes.
Yeah.
But again, it doesn't feel organic or like there's any reason. It's just what the narrative needs him to be at that particular moment.
I feel like there is a good story that could have been told with all the set pieces that this story has. I really do. There is a good story here. It just wasn't told.
This is probably a really good example of, like, you can have lots of really good ideas, but if you can't execute it in a way that makes people care about the characters in the world.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the thing, right? Nedra has her dad and her mum and her sister are meant to be, like, this really important part of her life. Her family is a big deal to her. But you can't tell that from anything that happens in the first two-thirds of the book.
Yeah.
And so there's not a lot of payoff, is what I would say.
Yeah, this book definitely is a textbook example of the show don't tell issue.
Mm.
It spends a lot of time telling you things.
Yeah.
Instead of invoking the actual emotions that it wants you to feel, it tells you how you should feel.
Actually, I think I would have liked Nedra a whole lot more if she'd been a giant bitch.
Yeah.
And there are a couple of moments where she does come off as kind of like, you're a fucking idiot, Gray, here is why. And if that had been the entire book, I would have enjoyed her more.
They might have had more chemistry if she'd behaved like that.
Yes, instead of being this twee, not even eager to please, just shallow.
It's weird. I don't even want to call it a Mary Sue problem, because I don't know it is.
It doesn't come across as a Mary Sue problem. It's actually a really interesting book, and I'm kind of glad we did it, even though both of us did not enjoy reading it. It's a quick read, I'll give it that, because it suffers from some pretty big problems in a way that's kind of unusual. Like, I was really worried that one of the issues with this book going in, because when she meets the gruff professor, who then amazed by her, like, smartness.
Oh, you thought there was going to be a romance?
Yes, which I find that really gross.
Oh, yeah, like, I really struggle
with that. Always really gross, and I hate it when it's in things. So that was where I thought one of the issues was going to be, because this guy, Master Ostrom, who is kind of more important in the story and more...
I mean, he's probably a more central figure because a lot of the action evolves around him.
Yeah, but I feel like he gets a lot more emotional time, and yet his and spoilers don't know. You can read this book. I don't want to say don't read
Look,
this book.
if you want to read this book, go for it. We weren't particularly fond of it, so we're going to dissect it, assuming you're not going to at this point, because I don't think either of us would say...
It's definitely...
Definitely read it.
There are points in it that I did appreciate, and I think it is young adult, and so obviously
very
as...
young adult.
As a 34-year-old and a...
I'm almost 28, but not quite.
Yes. And a 27¾-year-old. We're not the target market. So, I mean, there is a little bit of, like, some of the stuff that we're just like, oh, really? Is going to go over the target market's head as a problem. And obviously it's going to be a little bit more simplistic than some of the other books that we've read. However, I would say there are books for that target market that are much more sophisticated and interesting than this. So
my question is, would Teen You like this?
Probably not, because I think the chemistry between the two main characters is severely lacking.
Yeah, see, that's what I was thinking.
And I think that if they had managed to nail that relationship, then I think the rest of the story, being as flimsy as it is, wouldn't matter quite so much.
Mm.
Or if they'd managed to nail, like, the sister story. I feel like this book is lacking one really good relationship.
Absolutely.
And if there had been one really good relationship, you can kind of latch on to the rest of the story.
Because that's the way I approach YA when I read it. I'm increasingly finding I do struggle with YA. It's also hard because I am just guilty pleasure in terms of things that I read, is that the arsehole whiny rich dude clashing with someone from a lower class background and them having chemistry, that is actually a trope I'm very, very into. This book just didn't, like...
They didn't clash.
Gray wasn't... He wasn't enough of a character for me to care about him. And honestly, neither was Nedra.
Yeah, like I said, I just think it needed one relationship that I could hook into.
Yeah, let's leave the characters behind a bit.
Plot-wise, the big deal is that they are a plague that's running through the land and nobody can seem to cure it.
In fact, most people don't think it's actually happening to begin with.
Yes. And I actually thought that for all that we're bagging on it in this year, this book was written in 2018. She was remarkably prescient about how plague works in a world that's obsessed with politics. Because, one, it was only happening to poor people, so nobody cared. Two, it was only happening to people who worked in places that rich people never went to. Again, poor people, so nobody cared. And three, people couldn't get time off work, and so they spread it around. Gee, what does that sound like?
Yeah.
So good on her for being 100% on the mark about plague and how that would play out.
Yeah, it's definitely a wild thing to read during the pandemic. One of the set pieces in this is that it does pull the whole, like, it's not magic, it's science with its magic, which they call alchemy the whole time. I'm always a little, like, eye-raising about that trope anyway, because I very rarely see it done well.
Yeah.
It has been done well, but I think it's much harder than people realise. And I particularly hated it in this setting because it was just so... How would I describe it? Like, it was just so lip service with nothing to back it up.
Yeah. A quick warning for animal cruelty here, but the whole... So, the way that they take pain... And that really seems to be the only thing that they do with their alchemy as far
as... In a medical context, for sure. Yeah.
Is by taking the pain from a person and putting it into a rat, and the rat always dies.
And in excruciating pain, yeah, I would imagine. Yeah,
and excruciating pain. And they talk about this. And it's one of those situations where they say the quiet part out loud in a really weird way where I'm like, what are you trying to say with this? Because if you're trying to say something about the medical field in general, this wouldn't get past any ethics board that I've ever heard of. And if you're talking about another point, it really got lost because I don't know what it was and it just seemed kind of...
Unnecessary
and weird.
So the only thing I could think of was two things, really, that are intertwined. I think the reason it was set up like this was to set up the idea that the magic required an exchange, a life for a life sort of situation. And it had to be an equal exchange, which is why the rats always died, because they weren't physically take cake. It was an unfair exchange, which is sort of how the necromancy comes in. But then it also doesn't keep the necromancy separate enough
to make sense for it to be so evil and weird taboo, and no one is like it. Yeah.
And then the other thing is, I think the reason why it was always rats is because I think in the author's mind, that was a disposable animal.
Right, yeah, and there is a thing where she's like, well, you wouldn't use a kitten or a bunny. Thinking about it for 2 seconds, I'm like, well, why wouldn't they have two alchemists doing it, or five, and then you could spread the pain across 5 alchemists, and then no animal has to die.
And there's a few scenes, when I say it comes up a lot, it comes up a lot. There's one scene where she's working in the factory and they comment on the fact, instead of them being like nicely bred, small, placid rats from the university, they're rats that you'd get in the slums, so they're angry and dirty and stinky and huge. It was just so jarring, particularly because we can't avoid talking about this because it's so ingrained in the book. The book wants to say something about class, but it doesn't know enough about talking about class to say something about class.
No.
So throughout the book, there's a lot of talk about the poor factory workers being used as disposable bodies, and that's put right next to Nedra using these rats as disposable bodies to heal the factory workers who she's pitying because they're being viewed as disposable bodies. And it's just, maybe the author thought this would hammer home the message, but instead it just becomes very jarring
because
hero is doing exactly what it looks like you're trying to make commentary on it, and you're letting that happen.
Yeah, I feel like Nedra's meant to be a hero. Like, this whole time you're meant to see her as heroic. She kind of doesn't come across as heroic.
No.
So much as just self-serving, in a way. Yeah,
it's like, and again, maybe we're adults who have friends in medical fields and in science fields. So, yes. Like, we're definitely coming from a perspective that the target audience is not. But there's this whole thing where she doesn't want to study any other sciences, any other humanities. She only wants to study medical science because she wants to cure people from this plague that's already happening up north by the time she comes to the city.
Yeah.
And, like, I'm sitting here going, I honestly thought the master was going to turn around and go, no, you have to learn this. And she'd have to learn a lesson about, you actually have to start from the beginning.
Yeah.
You can't jump in as a first-year student and cure a pandemic. You have to understand the grounding. But no, the book just seems to think that's totally fine and reasonable, and she's right.
Which is wild, because I don't want somebody who has zero understanding of the whole world being the person who is in charge of my medical care. That is a terrible plan.
Yeah, it's just such a narrow way to view the world.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that's really telling about this book is that there's a young lady whose name is not important and I don't remember it, who tries to make friends with her pretty early on and is like, you should come to our politics salons, our history salons.
Yeah, she frames it as history, but I think it is more of a political group, yeah.
I mean, history and politics are buddies.
Nedra doesn't know that. She's pretty sure that you can be completely apolitical when you want to.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, Nedra effectively blows her off pretty early on. There's good reasons embedded in why she might. There's this weird fetishization of her as someone from the north happening in that group, but that's not why she blows her off.
No, it's because she has really important medicine things to do, and she doesn't go to any of her other classes, so she goes to this Master Ostrom's class, even though on the first day, he physically cuts her.
Oh, yeah.
And tells her that she's worthless. This is not good teaching.
So, bad teaching standards on display here. There's also Like, there's a lot of talk about revolution, but I'm not sure the author actually understands how real life revolutions work.
Pro tip, they usually don't start at the top.
No, they absolutely do not start at the top, but apparently the upper class will want to revolt.
And yes. Why, though? Like, it makes no sense.
Having too many taxes.
Oh, but the only thing that's bad is that they have a boy emperor who is the same age as Nedra, which they bring up, like, 5 times in this book that they're the same age. I don't know why.
Yes. I will be honest, I've definitely met people like that, and people like that do definitely exist. But it's so universal, and I think the thing that's really jarring is that there's absolutely no poor people who want a revolution or hate the emperor.
Yeah, I really hated this, because it's setting itself up to be both a class narrative and a colonialist narrative.
And except it doesn't know what colonialism is.
Yeah, and yet literally everybody who's against the emperor and the colonization of this country are shitty, awful, rich people.
And I presume upper class.
Yeah. It just is a weird decision to take. I love colonialism. Is that where we're going with this story?
It's really jarring. And, like, when I read this, I felt like there was no net mention of a native people anywhere. To me, it very much reinforced the awful myth that we have in Australia, which is the terra nullius thing. Yeah, there was, like, no one here before white people got here. You did think that maybe the northern villages were meant to be indigenous peoples?
Yes, and that kind of makes sense to me now, because I read the book regular styles, and Brie got the audiobook, and they decided to give Nedra a Scottish accent. So if you're kind of trying to tell this as an English versus Scottish people story, which is a decision you could have made.
Except the narrative fits much more with maybe the American Independence War, which is a separate conversation. This author does write in the acknowledgements that they were a big fan of Hamilton while they were writing this.
There's no shame in being a fan of Hamilton. But that shouldn't be the only revolutionary. You need to know what you are talking about if you want to write about it. Research! It's your friend!
If you want to write something, you want to consume things that are not fictionalized versions of what you want to write. Yes. You do want to either look at different genres or look outside of what you're doing to get a more rounded, because it's going to show through in your writing. If you want to write a sci-fi and you only have read sci-fi exactly like you want to write, your book is going to be very shallow because you've got no other experience or knowledge to base your work on.
Yeah, I think you've hit on the nail what the problem with this author was, is that they haven't consumed enough outside of the genre to be able to tell a well-rounded tale in this genre. And look, we have a whole podcast about reading books that are genre books. It's not like we don't know that that's fun. I only want to read about things when there are either dragons, space, or hot elf dudes. Vampires are also okay. But you need to do research, and it can't just be genre research. Sorry, I know it sucks, but you gotta.
If you want to write this book, do that, fine. If you only want hot elves and dragons, that's all good. Don't try and make it an allegory for a real life political thing.
Please don't.
Just, like, nothing is apolitical, and I want to say that right now because this book seems to disagree, but I do want to say that you can write a book without making political allegories the center of your book. Yeah, so since we're getting into the plot, do we want to talk what the plague ends up being and how you look? Because I have opinions.
Here's what I'll say. I think the last third of the book was the book that author wanted to write, because this is where the pacing actually makes sense. Again, spoilers, 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 it's a necromancy plague.
And here's the kicker. It's not just a necromancy plague because someone was fucking around. It's a necromancy plague made by the newly elected governor, who everyone thought was a good person who cared about the poor people, to take over the colony and kick off the emperor.
Yeah, there is a second book from this. And I have to say, I feel like this first book wasn't the story that she wanted to tell. And so maybe the second book, which gets into the juicier parts of her being a necromancer, the better story. So, you know, like, your mileage may vary. I don't think I'm going to pick it up. I don't think this book sold me enough on the story that I care, or the characters that I care enough to. But, you know, it definitely st- start from a more interesting place than this book. Let's go with that.
I definitely won't be picking this up for a whole bunch of reasons.
If you'd sold us on the family relationships at the beginning, if there'd been like a chapter where she's at home, even just one chapter before she comes back later on to watch her family die.
Or if there was more ongoing communication, because she's constantly writing letters back and forth, particularly to her sister, but also to her whole family. Now, if we'd actually got to see the context of the letters, that would have created a meaningful relationship.
Yes, and you could have told some of the story through those letters.
Actually, that would have been so much better.
And I actually would have liked to know more about her sister, because her sister actually seems interesting, even though Nedra kind of seems like she hates her sister. Did you get that feeling as well? Or at least is very dismissive of her life choices. And so when she's really upset about the fact that her sister has died, I don't feel it. She was pretty, oh, my sister, she's a hussy.
I don't think I got quite that amount of vibe, but I do think she saw her twin sister as a little bit frivolous.
Yeah.
I always got the impression the person she really cared about was her father.
Yeah, and then she definitely was a daddy's girl, which, you know, can work.
And there is a bit in the acknowledgements which mentions the author did lose her father while sort of working on this book. And
oh, that's awful.
Yes.
And I feel really bad about what I just said now.
Yes.
Oh, no.
And I do think that's why the relationship that does feel like it has the most weight is between Nedra and her father.
That is the relationship that when her dad dies is the most sad that I am in the entire book. I will say, though, between that and her relationship with Grey, it kind of comes off as a little woman-hating. She has no close female friends. She blows off the lady who, pretty genuinely it seems, is a fan of hers and wants to be her friend. And she kind of doesn't like her sister, and her mum is non-character.
Yeah, I feel like when we talk about heteronormative storytelling, this book is a really good example of that. And I can tell it's trying really hard not to be that, because there's just so many points where it points out like families that are queer or gay or like, and it doesn't in a very like, oh, no big deal, I'm just making sure that there are gays in my fantasy setting. But because the main narrative is so heteronormative, there's no other friendships, there's just nothing else to it.
Yeah.
It's oppressive.
Yeah, that is a good way of saying it.
I just felt smothered the whole time, because the book was so invested in me caring about these two and their relationship, but it actually gave me no reason aside from boy girl.
I can see his side. He's in love with her because
she's exotic and different
and kind of doesn't take shit from anyone. I don't get why she likes him, because there's no reason.
And then as the book progresses, there's a lot of him using a possessive noun for her, and she never uses that for him. And it's so, oh, I just struggle so much with it.
Look, we started this podcast so that we can give love to books that don't get love in normal book clubs in general. But this one, I struggled for love. Definitely a story here that could work. It just didn't come through.
This was not the trash for me.
No, and the same for me. And look, there's nothing wrong with trash, and there's nothing wrong with genre fiction. It's just that this book...
Yeah, I think the problem is the characters are unlikable in ways that aren't the interesting unlikable for me personally. I've said this before, and I'll probably say this every time. I read for characters and characters' relationships.
Yeah.
So if you don't give me enough meat there, it doesn't matter how good your world building or setting or your plot is, I won't care.
And I'm quite happy to read a book. I love Lord of the Rings, so I can jam with a really good world building. Nobody else should try and write Lord of the Rings. I want to be very clear on that point. Please stop trying. It doesn't work. You're very bad at it.
One time exclusive.
Yes. But Lord of the Rings is a very situation-driven story, and I am okay with that. I can read a book that is about the world. That's fine, but you have to make it consistent, and this is not that. So if you're reading it for relationships, they're not there. If you're reading it for interesting world building, I can give you 5 books that do the same thing much better. I hate to hate on a book because that's not what I'm into. I like to read things for fun and not for hate.
Yeah, and like if there is anyone who's read this and really liked it and you're still listening, I'm very sorry. But B, I'm really curious to see what worked for you and where your hooks were, because like there are obviously people who really liked this book.
I mean, yeah, it sold well enough to get a second book, so it's not that we could be the weirdos here. I'm 100% willing to be the weirdos.
Do we want to sort of give our final thoughts and like rating?
Yeah, all right. So again, I hate to hate on a book, and I hate it when we both want to hate on a book, because yeah, this is not a podcast pylon. It's not what we do. But this, oh boy, this book. I think if you were going to write about a very thinly veiled history, maybe do some research on that very thinly veiled history.
Yeah, my final thoughts is go read Tamora Pierce's Circle of Magic book, particularly Healing in the Vine, instead. Don't read this. I'd probably give it like 0.5 star. Like, that's how I'm feeling.
I'd give it 1.5.
Yeah.
Look, it's definitely not our favourite, and we really would like to hear from you if you did enjoy it. We're not just saying that. I can't find anything that in this book that you can't get elsewhere, essentially.
Yeah.
So, actual final thought. I think my thing is, if you're going to tell a story, if you have a story in your head that you want to tell, tell that story. Because this book really suffers from not telling the story that it wants to tell from the get-go. It comes out in the acknowledgements that the story was meant to start about 3/4 of the way through. And honestly, it would have been better had it started 3/4 of the way through. Like, look, if it doesn't sell, it doesn't sell. And I'm not saying only tell stories that won't sell money, don't sell out. Tell stories you want to tell, and in a way that's engaging. And fingers crossed they'll sell, because I would much rather read something that you were passionate about than something you felt like you had to write.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. So yeah, that's this month's book. Stay tuned for next month's book.
If you want to tell us that we were totally wrong about this book, or give us ideas about what you would like us to read in the future.
Yeah, so you can send us an email at badtastebookclub@gmail.com. We are on Twitter as the Bad Taste Book Pod. We are on Tumblr at Bad Taste Book Club. And we are also on Instagram at Bad Taste Book Club. I did try and keep them all the same, but Twitter wouldn't have it, guys.
Yeah, sorry about that. But if you search Bad Taste Book, it'll probably come up literally anywhere you search for us.
Yeah, so if you are listening to our eps and you want to tell us that we were wrong, or tell us that we were right, or just shout at us, please let us know.
Also, there is a non-zero chance that the animals that sometimes interrupt these wonderful podcasts will be shown on those mediums. So if you really like fluffy animals, I have some really cute ones, and they do show up, so you should definitely follow us for that. Other than that, you can find the Bad Taste Book Club at Audioboom or any podcatcher of any repute.
Yes, and if you are listening on iTunes or any catcher that lets you have reviews and ratings, please just give us a 5-star one. Tell us we're great. We like that.
Yeah, please say nice things about us. We're very, very vulnerable and needy. That's why we have a podcast, because we're needy.
Okay, so until next time.
Bye.
Bye. Speaking of the veer of political correctness and this fucking book, can we please talk about all the... Look at all these gay background characters! Please enjoy the most heteronormative narrative on Earth!
But there were gay people in the background.
Look, there were bay... Look, the sister who died was bi. Like, yeah. I'm the best queer rep.